Have you ever been at cruise altitude, staring at a weather radar image that's 45 minutes old and thought, there has to be a better way? I'm Vector on Clear Direct Radio Hangar, and today we're going to dig into something that could fundamentally change what it means to be connected in the cockpit. We're talking about Starlink Aviation, SpaceX's push to bring low Earth orbit broadband to aircraft of every size. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. If you've earned a milestone in this journey, first solo, instrument rating, commercial ticket, they make aviation challenge coins that actually do it justice. Beautifully crafted, built to last. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's break this down. Satellite connectivity on airplanes is not new. Airlines have been offering Wi-Fi for well over a decade now through providers like Gogo, Viasat, and Panasonic Avionics. But if you've ever tried to load a weather briefing or pull up ForeFlight on an in-flight Wi-Fi connection at flight level 350, you know the experience has been, let's be generous, inconsistent, slow speeds, high latency, dropped connections over the ocean. And those legacy systems rely on geostationary satellites parked about 22,000 miles above the equator. That distance is the fundamental problem. The signal has to travel 44,000 miles round trip, and physics doesn't care how much you paid for your subscription. Starlink takes a completely different approach. Instead of a handful of massive satellites in geostationary orbit, SpaceX has deployed over 6,000 small satellites in low Earth orbit, somewhere between 340 and 700 miles up. The result is dramatically lower latency. We're talking around 20 to 40 milliseconds instead of 600 or more, and the bandwidth is genuinely impressive. SpaceX is quoting up to 220 megabits per second for the aviation terminal. That's not theoretical. Airlines testing the system have reported real-world speeds that pilots and passengers actually notice. Now, here's what most people miss about why this matters beyond just streaming movies in the back of a regional jet. Think about what real-time high-bandwidth connectivity means for the flight deck. Right now, weather data in the cockpit comes through a few channels. You've got your onboard radar, which is great for what's immediately ahead, but tells you nothing about conditions 200 miles down the road. You've got ADS-B in weather through products like FISB, which is solid but limited in resolution and update rate. And if you're on a SiriusXM or similar satellite weather subscription, you're getting data that can be anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes old depending on the product. For thunderstorm avoidance at 200 knots, 20-minute-old data is a lifetime. Starlink-class connectivity could deliver full-resolution, near-real-time weather data directly to a cockpit display. Not the compressed, simplified products we're used to. The same radar mosaics and model data that dispatchers see on the ground. Updated every few minutes instead of every 15 or 20. Imagine pulling a full HRRR model update while you're en route, with the kind of detail that actually lets you make fine-grained deviation decisions instead of just painting big red blobs on a moving map. But weather is just the beginning. Think about what high bandwidth does for maintenance. Modern turbine engines on transport category aircraft already generate terabytes of data per flight. Right now, most of that data gets downloaded after landing through a ground-based system. With persistent broadband, engines can report anomalies in real time. A trend that might indicate a bearing issue or an oil consumption change gets flagged while the airplane is still en route, and maintenance can have parts and a plan ready before the aircraft even reaches the gate. Rolls-Royce and Pratt & Whitney have been building toward this for years, but they've been bottlenecked by the available bandwidth. Let's talk about the hardware for a second, because this is where it gets interesting for the general aviation side of the conversation. The current Starlink aviation terminal is designed for Part 25 transport category aircraft. It's a flat, electronically steered phased array antenna, roughly about 20 inches across. No moving parts. That's a significant advantage over legacy systems that use mechanically steered dishes, because moving parts on an airplane are always a maintenance headache. The aero terminal mounts conformally to the fuselage, creates minimal drag, and weighs somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 to 70 pounds installed. For a Boeing 737 or an Airbus A320, 70 pounds is nothing. Several airlines have already committed. JXX was one of the early adopters, installing Starlink on their Embraer 145 fleet. Hawaiian Airlines has been running it. Qatar Airways signed on. And the reviews from passengers have been overwhelmingly positive. People are actually noticing the difference, which tells you something because most passengers couldn't tell you what kind of engines are on the airplane, but they can absolutely tell you when the Wi-Fi actually works. Here's where I want to be honest about the limitations and the timeline for the rest of us. If you're flying a Bonanza, or a Cirrus, or a King Air, you're not getting Starlink in your airplane anytime soon. The current aviation terminal requires a supplemental type certificate for each airframe, and the certification cost alone puts it out of reach for light GA. SpaceX has talked about smaller terminals, and they do make a flat, high-performance unit for marine and RV applications. That's much more compact. But aviation certification is a different animal. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, requires DO-160 environmental qualification testing, which covers everything from vibration to lightning to rapid decompression. That testing is expensive and time-consuming, and SpaceX hasn't announced a Part 23 or Light Sport category product. There are some interesting workarounds emerging, though. A few experimental aircraft builders have mounted the residential Starlink dish, the round one inside unpressurized baggage compartments or behind fiberglass fairings. And yes, it works. It works surprisingly well, actually. There are forum posts and YouTube videos showing stable connections at 12,000 feet in a van's RV-10, but that's experimental category only, and you need to be thoughtful about the power draw. The standard residential terminal pulls about 40 to 75 watts, which is meaningful on a 28-volt electrical system that's already running avionics. The data tells an interesting story about what the competitive landscape looks like. Gogo, which has dominated the business aviation connectivity market for years, launched their Gogo Galileo system specifically to compete with Starlink. Galileo uses a mix of geostationary and medium Earth orbit satellites, and Gogo is positioning it as being purpose-built for aviation rather than adapted from a consumer product. That's actually a fair criticism of Starlink. SpaceX designed this constellation primarily for ground-based internet service. Aviation was an afterthought that became a product line, not the other way around. Viasat merged with Inmarsat in 2023, and now operates the largest combined geostationary and L-band satellite fleet in the industry. They're not standing still either. And then there's OneWeb, now part of Eutelsat, building their own low-Earth orbit constellation that could eventually offer aviation terminals. So you've got a genuine four-way competition developing, and that's good for everyone who flies. Competition drives prices down and performance up. 5 years ago, a broadband SATCOM installation on a mid-sized business jet would run you $300,000 or more, plus monthly fees that could hit $10,000 or $15,000. Those numbers are already coming down, and with multiple LEO constellations competing, they should continue to drop. Now let me talk about something that doesn't get enough attention in the Starlink hype cycle. And that's cybersecurity. When you connect an aircraft to a persistent broadband internet link, you are fundamentally changing the threat surface of that airplane. Avionics systems on modern aircraft are supposed to be air-gapped from passenger-facing networks. There are physical and logical separations built into the architecture that prevent someone on the cabin Wi-Fi from accessing flight-critical systems. But as connectivity becomes more deeply integrated, as airlines want real-time data flowing to and from the flight deck, those boundaries get more complex to maintain. The FAA and the European Union, Aviation Safety Agency, ESA, have both published special conditions and advisory circulars addressing aircraft network security. And the major avionics manufacturers, Collins, Honeywell, Thales, take this seriously. But it's an evolving threat, and the more bandwidth you push into the airplane, the more attack surface you potentially create. This isn't a reason not to do it. It's a reason to do it carefully. There's another dimension worth considering, and it's one that affects how we think about pilot skills long term. When you have a persistent, high-bandwidth connection to the ground, the temptation is to shift more and more decision-making off the airplane. Why train pilots to interpret raw weather data when you can have an algorithm on the ground do it and uplink the recommendation? Why have the crew troubleshoot a hydraulic anomaly from a checklist when a maintenance engineer can see the same data in real time and talk them through it? The answer is redundancy. The system works until it doesn't. And in aviation, the thing that keeps the thing working when the thing fails is a human being who understands the fundamentals. I'm a technology optimist. I love what broadband connectivity can do for situational awareness and operational efficiency, but I also know that every new dependency is a potential single point of failure, and the best pilots are the ones who can still fly the airplane when the screens go dark. So where does all this land for airline and business jet operators? Starlink Aviation is already here. And it's already proving that low Earth orbit broadband is a step change in what's possible. The speeds are real, the latency improvement is real, and the competitive pressure it's putting on legacy providers is driving the whole industry forward. For Part 23 and GA pilots, we're probably 3 to 5 years away from a certified, reasonably priced terminal. SpaceX has the manufacturing scale to drive costs down, but aviation certification doesn't move at Silicon Valley speed. And it shouldn't. In the meantime, if you're building experimental, it's worth watching what the home-built community is doing, because they're the beta testers for the rest of us. And for everyone, the bigger story isn't really about Wi-Fi. It's about what happens when an airplane becomes a fully connected node in a real-time data network. That changes weather avoidance, that changes maintenance, that changes air traffic management, and eventually it changes what we expect a pilot to know and do. This one drew from reporting by Aviation Week, The Air Current, and SpaceX's own Starlink aviation documentation, plus some excellent firsthand accounts from the experimental aviation community. You can find more at radiohanger.com. I'm Vector on Clear Direct. Stay curious up there. I'll catch you next time.